Hi, I'm Eric.
And I'm Brittany.
And we are...
For Colored Nerds.
The conversations that black people have...
When white people are not in the room.
But we record it and put it on the internet.
Yes.
Isn't it clear that we put it on the internet? Like, I mean, that part is kind of self-explanatory.
It's implicit.
But, I don't know.
No, I mean, you know, sometimes it's
like... what it is. You gotta tell people what it is.
You gotta tell people what it is. It is true. That's true. That's true. That's true.
How you doing, Brittany?
I'm gonna be honest. I'm doing pretty fucking good, man.
It's not bad. I had some coffee this morning.
I had a lot of coffee good. This morning. I'm fucking
I'm working
wired.
Through it. Yeah, it's a good day. It's a good, beautiful Sunday morning.
I feel like it's something important recently happened.
That's a few things. What are we going to talk about today?
We're going to talk about reality television.
Yes, yes. I'm real hyped. So you might have heard us.
I might have heard us.
On NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour.
Yes.
With Linda Holmes.
Yes. Shout out Linda.
Yes.
Shout out Jessica.
Yes. We had a great short talk about like Real Housewives of Potomac. Which, and Real Housewives of Potomac is...
Amazing.
Amazing.
Super black.
Yeah.
Who put you on?
You put me on. I'll give you a little credit.
Thank you
put
you.
Me on.
You
told
you,
me about
you.
It.
I did.
And originally, like, I had never really seen any of the, honestly, I didn't see the promos, but I heard the streets bubbling. You know, I keep my ear to these reality streets.
Wait, real quick, I got a shout out. I actually got put on to Real Housewives of Potomac by my younger sister, Tiffany.
Yes.
And Tiffany actually has been saying, she's going to kill me.
She's going to be pissed.
She's been saying that she has wanted, she's like, when y'all do a reality television episode, y'all need to have me on. Because she's a true fucking expert.
Yeah.
But Tiffany felt like it was important to go to D.C. this weekend, to go be a charter day.
Oh.
You know, Howard University, whatever. I've never been to any of that shit. I have no clue.
I go homecoming every now and again.
I've never been. I've been homecoming zero times.
I've been.
You could, went once. I was definitely there.
I was twice. Might have been once.
Might have been
once.
Yeah, no. So she, so sorry, Tiffany, but I got to give her her credit. So credit. Hashtag.
I mean, I would actually, like, she's, like, we were talking. I realized, like, wow, you're more well-versed in this reality TV shit than I am.
When it comes on TV, you can't talk. Yeah. You can't sit in the same room and talk.
So, I mean, honestly, this is as I like to say, it's a deep well. It's a deep, deep well.
Oh, it's so good.
It is the same Real Housewives. Like, the formula itself is not different. But what makes this show very special, in my opinion, is it's this group of black women.
Uh-huh.
And... they clearly have access to a degree of wealth that I don't think the black women in the Real Housewives ecosystem have had.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. They have an access to degree of wealth. I'm not sure a lot of even the non-black women in the Real Housewives ecosystem have had. Beverly Hills, I would say they got some money. It's a couple women in New York who got money. But the rest of these...
Yeah, Jersey ain't really, you know.
They be getting money, but
maybe it's,
how?
Yeah, I was about to say. It's not on their taxes.
They're
not.
No.
But you haven't really seen that in Atlanta. Like, Atlanta, I mean, don't get it twisted. I feel like a lot of the women, especially now, are probably, you know, wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very, like, it's almost, like, recently earned, if that's the right point.
A lot of it's earned through celebrity, too. Yeah. It's like kind of like they came up. They didn't necessarily come from.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But with Real Housewives of Potomac, it's clear that a lot of these women come from, like, black old money,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
which, again, to be really specific, is very recent. We haven't had access to a lot of time to really build,
well,
like, Vanderbilt money.
Which we've talked about before.
Yep.
Talked about before. And also, like, obviously... slavery played a hand in this.
Yeah. Jim Crow. General white supremacy.
Yeah, white supremacy, you know, redlining, all that shit. Yeah. Y'all know the shit. Like
housing segregation.
We're not glossing over anything, but we're taking y'all's intelligence for granted.
Yes.
Your knowledge of American history for granted. Basically, we ain't got no money.
Yeah.
Because white man helps back.
Exactly. But these particular...
I can't believe I have a job, but go ahead.
But these particular black women, at least their families, were able to, at least for like a few generations, a couple generations,
some
of them, have been able to like acquire some wealth and have moved to Potomac, Maryland, which is right out basically D.C., like D.C. suburbs.
Yeah.
I don't know why they're trying. They fake it. They really trying.
They were really trying.
But this their particular zip code is one of the, if not the most, you say it's most
wealthiest. Yeah, wealthiest. It's like not even, I don't even know if Potomac was meant to be a city. I think. From what I've read, it is a census-designated area.
So they live in Potomac, Maryland. It's like ridiculously rich and wealthy. Don't get it twisted. It's not like Potomac is like this black oasis in, you know, right outside of Chocolate City. No, it's like very white.
Yeah.
Very white. But there are, you know, a small amount of black families within this community. And Real Housewives of Potomac smartly chose to focus within this, like, this particular group.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like, if you think about it, they very much didn't have to. Or they even could have, like branched it out, like, could have made it, a mix.
Yeah, they could have had, you know, some white women, some, you know, whoever else was there. But they went all black, which I think was a great decision.
Yeah, and so all of the women on the show have, really, really interesting personalities. Not just your typical, like, oh, I'm on a reality TV show, it's lit, you know, type of personalities.
They would be lit or doing whatever they're doing, regardless of the show.
Yeah, yeah. So you have, just to run through them really quick, you have Karen, which is my personal favorite.
Yeah. Karen is, like, the matriarch. She is, like, she thinks that she's, like, you know, the grand whatever, poobah of the whole situation. She's this old, light-skinned black woman.
A black bourgeoisie.
She's always talking about goddamn etiquette.
Yes.
She has huge boobs.
Yes. But, yeah, she is amazing. She's always trying to school everybody and, like, show them the ways of how black people in Potomac behave and carry themselves.
Yeah.
Trying to shepherd them in that way.
Yeah.
Then you have, I think after you talk about Karen, you always have to talk about Giselle.
Oh, yeah. I fucking love Giselle.
Giselle is awesome. Like, seems like genuinely, like, a very cool person.
Yeah, actually. She actually seems pretty chill. Well, not chill, but you know what I mean.
She, I think, also comes from...
She comes from retirement, comes from money.
So you have Giselle. Then you have Charisse, who is like, oh, man, tragic as fuck.
Yeah.
So Charisse was married to...
Charisse is married to the coach, the head coach of, I think, Rutgers basketball.
Yeah. Eddie Jordan.
He doesn't seem to communicate with her at all.
Yeah.
He
like,
seems to be kind of a dick.
Yeah. I mean, so basically, she's been raising their kids while he is in Jersey with no real communication from him or input.
Not very far at all. It's like 2 hours or something like that.
Yeah. Not even a day's drive.
Yes.
Like,
no.
You start in the morning, you finish in morning. Like, yes. In the morning time.
Exactly.
But basically he has been ghost and she had to break up with him through text message to which he didn't respond.
Yeah, she divorced. She said she was going to start divorce proceedings if he had text message and he didn't respond. Oh, that's so painful.
Yeah.
She has the worst weave though.
She does.
It's kind of disheartening.
Yeah.
Who should we talk about? Katie.
Katie. Woo!
Katie.
Katie.
Katie to me is like this is like in a way the special sauce of
so she probably she also comes from like her family is very wealthy and it seems like her family is relatively prestigious. She is biracial.
Father's Jewish and her mother is black.
Yep. And she is struggling with a lot of things. Like, how she defines her ethnicity, how she defines her relationship with her boyfriend, her long-term boyfriend.
Oh, my gosh.
Who she
depressing.
Is desperate to get married to.
And it's like, it's like weird, too, because, like, I'm not biracial, so I don't know that experience. But you can see that she's taking some stretches and some liberties with, like, choosing like with how she chooses to identify and especially in what contexts and why.
Yes.
It's definitely scary.
Yeah.
So she's wild, desperate. She's a mess.
Yeah. So then you have Robin.
Love Robin.
Robin is awesome. Seems real. Seems chill as fuck.
Chill as fuck.
But her home life is
interesting.
A little.
But I think it's going to work itself out.
Weird. Yeah. So basically she is divorced but still lives with her husband.
Yeah.
Like
they sleep
in the same bed.
They live in the same house.
Kids don't know they're divorced.
It's weird.
Yeah. They're not together, but basically they're together.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like.
Yeah. And they actually weirdly have the healthiest dynamic as far as like how they interact with each other. They seem to really love each other and care about each other. And like, but he cheated it. And I think that I actually ultimately think that they're going to get.
They seem like
they're going to get back together.
And then you have Ashley.
Ooh, man.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. You can just tell by a name that she's younger than everybody else.
Yeah. Like 26 years old, I think they say.
Yeah, she turns 27 at her cat themed birthday party, kitty cat birthday party on the show.
Mm-hmm. With the cash bar.
Yeah, with the cat. I'm gonna be honest.
Yeah.
We're gonna go back around the etiquette thing because I got some thoughts about that I realized from watching the show. But go ahead.
Okay. So Ashley does not come from money. She clearly has come through some shit.
Yeah.
And has married this very rich, very wealthy developer,
white Australian man.
Australian man.
Who's weird as fuck.
Yeah, very, very strange man. But she, so Ashley is extremely, I guess thirsty is
thirsty, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed.
Yeah. Yeah, and really wants to belong in this group of women who come, this group of black women.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That sets up some interesting dynamics on the show. So that's, I think that's everybody, right?
I think that's everybody, yeah. It's a really, I mean, it's like, if you haven't seen the franchise, it's still early. You can definitely get it on the ground level. So like, this is like investing in the business. But the show is just fucking awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, I want to come back to the etiquette piece. Karen, specifically, is the like keeper of etiquette and social behavior in the group. She's constantly trying to like school all the women on how they should behave.
Yeah.
All these grown women, all these grown people.
But I'm going to, this is the thing though, I realized from watching this show. So we were having a conversation with somebody else the other day. I actually, something I've realized from reading more about the show and from watching it is that, like, I actually am more like Karen as far as etiquette is concerned than, like, anybody else.
Really?
And, like, some of that is, okay, so some of that is my upbringing.
Yeah.
Like, as, I mean, like, the women who are, the type of women who are on that show are not unfamiliar to me. Mm. Now, granted, like, that type of drama is not, like, you know
it's
what I'm
an
saying?
It's an exaggeration.
Yeah. A few things I would say separate at least you and I probably on the opinion as far as etiquette.
Yeah.
One is, like, I'm a woman and you're a man, right?
Yeah.
So, like, something that, like, etiquette and how you're supposed to behave is something that is, like, always passed down, I think, from mothers to daughters. And so, like, a lot of ideas about how you should behave, like, when Ashley had the cash bar at her birthday party.
You were offended.
When we were talking about it the other day, I was like, no, that actually really bothered me. It was like one of the things where it's just like, it's just not how you're supposed to do things. It really isn't. If you have a birthday, at that level of wealth. Yeah, that level of wealth. You have a birthday party at a bar that you own. It's really tacky and really rude.
I don't know that they own the bar.
He
did own the bar.
Yeah. At a bar that you own, it's really tacky to have people come there and pay for their own drinks. Like, that's very, very, it's very tacky to do that. It really is. Cheap. Is what, at the end of the day, it's just straight up fucking cheap. And I don't like that shit. But, like, the shit about, some of the shit is, like, too much.
Yeah.
The older I get, the more I realize that I have very strong ideas about how people are supposed to do things.
This is deep.
Yeah. This the older deep. I get, the more I realize I have very strong ideas about how people are supposed to do things. I don't, like, agree with Karen all of the time.
Yeah.
But, like, that whole idea of etiquette and stuff. The other thing is, like, some of that I think has to do with, like, growing up bougie, and some of that is, like, status stuff. Some of that is also, like, old respectability stuff.
Yeah. Keeping up with the Joneses to a degree.
Yeah, not really so much keeping up with the Joneses, but making sure that you are respected by white people, probably, honestly, in every single situation. So, like, stuff that maybe you were taught to do in school or at work, like, I think more often than not, women are, I think women are exposed to a wider range of household management.
Yeah.
At a younger age and consistently throughout life reminded of certain things. So, like, there's a friend of ours who refers to me as trained. I get what she means. Where it's just, like, I would know how to, like, plan it and throw a party of a certain size or, like, no, like, there's certain shit that I don't do that I know I should be doing and all that kind of stuff. Like, all of that stuff was impressed upon me a lot as a younger person.
Yeah.
And so, like, it's weird to watch the show and see other people respond to some of the etiquette stuff. Because some of that stuff, I'm like, no, you don't write as Karen did to Giselle.
Yeah. Give somebody a picture
a framed, like, list of etiquette rules or whatever.
That,
like,
you're indicating that she did not follow.
Right. Yeah. No, like, I don't
that's
think that,
petty.
That's petty. And it's crazy. And there's no need to do that. But there is a certain way that I actually, if I'm realizing now that I do think that things should be done. Some of that has to do with growing up bougie, and some of it has to do with like being specifically like a black woman and learning how to, keep yourself up or seem a certain way to, like, you know, like a
to
like
everyone.
To everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. So, like, honestly, my background, like, it was weird. So, I mean, my father has a little bit of, like, not wealth, like, he has a little bit of money or whatever. But we, you know, like, our family as a whole does not come from any degree of wealth at all. But living in a certain neighborhood, when he moved to that neighborhood, I started going to school in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in school with a lot of people who had like dough. Yeah. You know, and I very much ended up hanging out with a lot. I mean, we hung out with everybody, but I ended up hanging out with a lot of them. So a lot of them became like my really good friends. So I was very close to a lot of people who were in like the Jack and Jill set.
Yeah.
You know, and like that whole
that yeah, I didn't do.
That like whole like thing. Like I was an escort in a cotillion, you know.
Yeah.
It was not in Botillion.
I was so buck wild. Nobody could get me to do a goddamn. My parents could not get me to do a goddamn.
Yeah.
I think both my sisters ended up going through teenage cotillion whatever thing type of stuff where you get some training.
Yeah.
So by the time I came to Howard, I mean, I was basically a savage. But as an adult, I'm still basically a savage.
I mean, that's honestly what I kind of felt like, because it was very much, and maybe this is why I identify so much with like a, I would say a Giselle or even like an Ashley to a degree.
Yeah.
In the sense that like I always felt a little bit like an outsider, and it was like the lines of distinction were very clear.
Yeah.
And a lot of it seemed like so much that I was like, I don't want any parts of this, you know? So I never really, I definitely didn't grow that much of an appreciation for how, you know, like black people with a certain amount of status and wealth were supposed to act. I very much rebelled against
it. The thing about that too, though, is that like for me, my parents, like no one in my family comes for money.
Yeah.
My parents have, like they did pretty good.
Yeah.
But like, I did not grow up rich. Grow bougie, which is like that's
it's a very different.
That's a very different thing. And actually, there's a really good episode of This American Life with Neil Drumming and Ta-Nehisi Coates where he talks about the difference between being a snob and being bougie.
Yeah.
So no, I did like nobody in my family comes for money, but I did grow up bougie. So like there is a degree, like I actually do understand like a Giselle or a Robin where it's like you came up in it, but also like you know that you don't like
you don't really fuck with it.
Yeah, like, it ain't like it's not necessary.
Deep.
It's not that deep, right? So there's like, I mean, you know, not to shit on the way that I grew up or any of the people that I grew up with, but it's just like that way of life. It's not something that I like, you know, I'm tied to till the day I die. Or
no, totally.
Like
and I'm not even like criticizing it that much. It just was never really something I could like tap into.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like there was like at the end of the day, I had to drive like back home to like my neighborhood, which didn't look like the neighborhood where I was hanging out at. So like, you know, it was like I was visiting.
Yeah.
I always felt like I was visiting. So I just never really like, you know, paid it that much money. But it's really interesting to see them put that much stock in those types of relationships, in this etiquette, in this like, in this performance, which is interesting in the concept of like reality TV as a whole, which is very much a performance, like you're performing your life.
They would be performing this shit regardless of the camera. That's the thing that actually I like about it, and the thing that actually like I think maybe has me so invested in the series. I've seen various degrees of this performance. I participated in various degrees. I've had the privilege of rejecting various degrees of this performance in my regular life.
Yeah.
And so like
it just seems fairly accurate.
It seems, I mean, yeah, it's everything is heightened.
Yeah.
But like
it's not far leap.
It's not, if you take all the drama out of it, there's not a lot that rings false.
Yeah. So that's just the etiquette piece.
Yeah.
The race part of that is really interesting as well. And I guess when you talk about race specifically in this context, I think you have to talk about Katie and you have to talk about Robin, which is really interesting.
So, and Giselle.
But like, so starting with Robin, I think Robin is really interesting. So Robin is basically passing. Like she's not trying to, but she could. Is a very, very light-skinned woman.
Yeah.
Like honestly, like I was watching with somebody else and they were like, oh, I thought she was white. Wait, she's white. Like literally they just started watching and having a background on the show. They were like, literally, I thought I was watching a white woman.
Yeah.
Which was interesting because I saw her and I was like, oh, she's definitely black. Like,
yeah,
definitely
I thought black. She was black from jump.
But the more she like talked about it, the more like if you take a step back, you look at her like her hair. She has blonde hair. She has like green eyes.
Yeah,
she's very, very, very fair skin.
Yeah, and her features are like, you know, obviously like to me they read black.
Yeah,
but like there are many situations wherein she could pass.
But she definitely like claims her status as a black woman.
Yeah,
but is very cognizant of like her skin color and how that has probably helped her. Like she talks about how it probably has helped her move through like the social circles in Potomac.
Yeah, she has without I think like the academic naming or whatever, I think seems to have a pretty strong grip on like her privilege, like passing privilege and light skin privilege.
Yeah,
like economic privilege. Like she seems to understand all that.
Yeah,
and she like still continues. She always is letting people know that she's black. She's like, I'm black. Both my parents are black.
Yeah.
All four of my grandparents are black. And that's like, she like went to an HBCU, is a Delta.
Yeah.
Like, she ain't even know AKA. She a Delta.
Yeah. So that's Robin. But then you have Katie, who is very clearly kind of struggling with her, like, racial identity.
Yeah.
So Katie, like, her dad is Jewish and her mom was Black.
Yeah.
And so she's sitting around. There's one scene where she's sitting around talking to the other women on the show. And they're all talking about, like, their racial identity. And she's like, well, I don't consider myself Black. I consider myself biracial. And she's sitting around a group of Black women.
Right. And it's also crazy because you could definitely be both.
Yeah. Like, that doesn't mean.
Yeah. Being biracial doesn't mean that you are not Black.
Exactly. And
well, I mean, everybody defines that shit differently. Yeah. But at the end of the day, sometimes, like, racial identity is what you know yourself to be.
Mm-hmm. What people perceive you to be.
Exactly. And also what people perceive you to be. Yeah. If you see a woman who's like, I'm looking at my own self.
Yeah.
She might be a shade darker than I am, right?
Yeah.
And she has a weave. So, like, if I see her, I'm going to be like, what's she's up, Black. Sis? You Black?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We Black. It's lit.
You in the club.
Right. And, like, you know, she's biracial. That's totally legit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like.
But no one's
saying that that's not the case. No one's saying that she's not Black and Jewish.
Yeah.
She had a Jewish naming ceremony for her kids while late. And it was like, it's like weird because, like, I have family that's Black and Jewish.
Yeah.
Well, and it seems to me to be opportunistic in trying to secure her boyfriend, like like a marriage proposal from her boyfriend who's Jewish.
Yep.
That really grinds my fucking gears.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's literally your family's heritage.
Yeah.
And you busting this shit out just so, because she was married to a Catholic guy for a while.
Yeah.
Well, not for a while. They were friends for a long time. I looked this shit up. They're friends for a long time. And then they finally started dating and they married. And actually, it's weird because they divorced, but, like, they're still cool or whatever. Yeah. And he, like, seems to be like a nice guy or whatever. But yeah, now all of a sudden she's like, I'm re-embracing my Jewish heritage. And it's like, that to me gotta be embarrassing for her family.
It's gotta be embarrassing for her family. And, like, she clearly also doesn't realize how a lot of people clearly see through it. It's weird to see someone so opportunistic.
Yes.
In how they, like, play fast and loose with race in this weird kind of cultural society. Because she very much wants to, she was trying to get close to Karen to tap into this, like, this Black network of wealth to raise money.
Yeah.
But she also is real thirsty to kind of appear as an other, quote unquote, and as a Jewish other so that she can justify herself to her boyfriend.
Yeah, and, like, basically trying to seem more desirable as, like, a Jewish wife and mother. And it's just like, It's a mess.
Yeah.
It's a big mess. It's interesting because one of the things I really like about the show, when you talk about Giselle and Karen both look like actual, like, white Barbie dolls. Like, do you know what I'm saying? They both have pale skin. They both have, like, bright greenish blue eyes and, like, blonde hair. But they're both like, I'm Black, I'm Black, I'm Black, I'm Black, I'm Black. Yeah. Now, not to get it twisted, Giselle said a couple of things where I was like, oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Girl, okay.
She came at somebody for their natural, she came at Ashley for a natural
hair. And Ashley's hair, I'm sorry, Ashley needs to be giving out, she could do some tutorials because her hair looks on point. And Giselle said something about how it was looking bushy and all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, there's definitely some, like, it's like she knows that she has light skin, like the light skin, the green eyes and the blonde hair. And she also knows that she's Black, but she also knows that she loves having light skin and green eyes and blonde hair. There's, like, that passing stuff there to, like, the way that they shoot the show, to me, it's like they don't go out of their way to explain any of the racial or color politics.
Oh, no.
Like, if you're Black, you get it.
Yeah, and, like, honestly,
and if you're white, you might not be understanding the true value of Real Housewives of Potomac.
If you just watch it on the surface, you can definitely tell why it's just, like, a normal entity in the real, like, it's a normal piece of the Real Housewives ecosystem.
Yeah.
But, again, like you were saying, like, for us, I'm sitting there gasping, like, looking like, yo, this shit, just from the comments, from the way that they carried themselves, like, I'm seeing a lot of subtle things that call out to Black people specifically.
I mean, and that makes the show honestly super fucking enjoyable for me to watch.
Watch Real Housewives of Potomac.
You need to watch Real Housewives of Potomac.
But we do want to take this opportunity, since we're talking about
want to take this opportunity to expose and drag Eric.
Okay.
But I don't even know if this is dragging, because it's actually one of your most enjoyable personality traits. Mm. Eric fucking, I don't know anybody outside of my younger sister who loves reality television with specifically featuring Black women.
Yep.
Even though you do love all Real Housewives franchises.
I love all reality TV as a whole, but especially the Black.
Yeah, like, and you lied about it for a little while, where you were like, I just like, you know, that's that kind of the season women in their 30s and 40s wearing tight dresses I like. And I'm like, but you know, but you're too into every franchise. Like, Eric watches Real Housewives of Atlanta, Real Housewives of New York.
Yeah.
You've watched New Jersey.
Yeah.
You also have watched Beverly Hills.
A little bit.
But less. Yeah, like, and you haven't really seen any, I was going
to
say
Oakland. I couldn't name the characters if you really asked me to be. But I've seen, like, a couple episodes,
yeah. Yeah, so you never really watched Orange County. I think you, like all of us, we all tried to watch DC. It was fucking terrible.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're deep into Potomac.
Yeah.
But you also love Basketball Wives LA.
Yep.
Basketball Wives Miami.
Yep.
Love and Hip Hop New York.
Yep.
Love and Hip Hop LA.
Yep.
Love and Hip Hop Atlanta.
Factual.
You follow every single one of these franchises with a degree of just like
depth.
Yeah. And dedication and reverence that I just find startling, breathtaking, and admirable.
Well,
tell us more about that, Eric.
So, okay. So to start back, way back. I grew up very much a fan of Real World. Like I was a big Real World fan. Watched every season. And I appreciated the concept of putting people like in a room or in a house and kind of seeing what happens.
So are you surprised me? Last night, me and Bae were watching, what is it, The Mad Real World on the Chappelle Show?
Yeah, that shit's so good.
No, that shit is so good, but it's literally like the truth. You find six of the, like seven, like literally one black person, six of the craziest white people you've ever met, you put them in a house.
It's amazing TV. So I started there. At that point, like honestly, way back, Real World wasn't really as much of a guilty pleasure. Like towards the end, it's
Vegas,
got like
at Vegas,
yeah, it's shit kind of went off the rails. It's got crazy, but I definitely watching. I thought like, oh, this has some like cultural value, and so then I think it was at Howard I started watching Real Housewives. I think that's when Real Housewives Atlanta like first really came out.
Yeah, so good.
Actually, no. I started watching Real Housewives of New York first.
Oh, that was good, too. When it was the first with, like, Jill and Bethany.
Jill Zarin, Bethany Frankel.
Because before they only
Countess.
Had... Sorry, I hate to put it this way. The broke bitches on Oakland County.
Yeah.
Oakland County's where the fuck I'm from. Orange County. Right.
Yeah. But I didn't really fuck with that. But when New York came out, I was like, oh, this
they got
shit's
money.
Good. They got money. And they're like, everybody was like real petty and kind of real over the top. Like,
yeah.
I was like, oh, man, this is really interesting.
They also didn't have, like, the sad, broken problems that a lot of the women on Oakland, Jesus fucking Christ, that a lot of the women on Orange County had.
Yeah.
This is like terrible Freudian slips.
So then Real Housewives of Atlanta came out. And honestly, that just, it changed things for me. Like it really changed things for me. Like I was fascinated by like NeNe Leakes. I was fascinated by like, honestly, even Kim. Like Kim and NeNe's relationship was really interesting to me.
In sets of black women who kind of run together to try to find rich men.
Yeah.
Which is a thing.
Yeah.
And everybody, at least even tangentially, knows some people like that. Yeah. There's always at least one white woman who has some real interesting shit going on.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's in the mix with a whole bunch of black women.
Yeah. Like in a really weird way. It's funny because like on all those UPN and like like or whatever sitcoms, they always
like
have
the
a
game?
One. Yeah, but they always have one white. But yes.
It's lit.
Yeah.
So at that point, I was like, I had to kind of have a come to Jesus with myself and realize like, am I watching this for some sort of cultural value? Am I rising above? Am I watching this ironically? Or do I actually enjoy this type of TV?
You love it.
And I realized like, no, I really fucking love it. I really fucking love it. So I watch it all. Like I honestly watch it all. Like I've seen every episode of even like Dating Naked. Like,
right.
I've seen like Dating Naked. I've seen like, I don't do like Bachelor or Bachelorette.
That shit is whack to me.
Yeah,
that shit is
trash.
Real corny.
But,
it is trash.
But anything on Bravo, VH1, like some MTV stuff too, I'm there.
You are
I'm present.
There.
I'm present. I'm attentive.
Actually, sometimes you even watch Bad Girls Club.
Yeah, at Howard, I was super into Bad Girls Club.
Yeah.
But I kind of fell off because I don't have...
Own?
I think, no, it's
oxygen.
Not owned.
Oxygen.
I don't have oxygen anymore.
Which might be, oh, it's not owned.
And
Oprah
it's
Winfrey
not,
Network is owned.
Yeah.
It's oxygen.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's not, I trust it's not
yeah,
on,
you're
on
right,
network.
You're right, you're right.
But I don't have oxygen and I don't really, it's not on Hulu or Amazon. So
that's
I'm like,
true, I know. You have a Roku and you're real dedicated to that.
Yeah.
But so, shout out to Nisha Popoff. Go ahead, sorry.
So anyway, so that started my reverence, but like, I enjoy it. But then also now I really like, I love looking at the way these relationships play out. Like, I do think there is some, like, it's super problematic on a lot of different ways, which we're going to try to unpack. But I do think there is some value in watching this type of television to see how people interact. There are a lot of, like, clear, like, trends that I think are really, really interesting and fascinating. So, one, I actually didn't even really, I couldn't qualify it until I started. I've been reading Bad Feminist by Roxane mm-hmm. Gay.
Shout out Roxane.
Shout out Roxane Gay. We talked about her in Price of Black Ambition.
Yes.
So, you know, looking for something else, go check that out.
Go check it out.
It's an early episode.
Early episode. Sound quality's bad, but you still fucks with us anyway.
Yeah. But so I've been reading Bad Feminist by Roxane Gay. She has an essay called The Garish Glorious Spectacles. And in it, she talks about this book, Green Girl, and the concept of being a green girl. And so she kind of describes it as like life as a performance and gender specifically as a performance. Mm. People are very much interested in the performance of femininity.
Yes, they are.
And what kind of goes into that performance of femininity is like learning the power of being a woman, mm-hmm. the power that you can like wield over men and society and like in general, like yeah. how you interact with other people
yeah.
within that and using that power to kind of provide a step stool, if you will, to different class levels, different levels of wealth.
Yeah.
Like a variety of different things.
Yeah.
And so like when she laid this shit out, honestly, I'm sitting there on the train reading my Kindle and my mind is like exploding. Like I'm like, fuck. I've never heard someone really describe that trope so well. It's expressed in so many different ways throughout mm-hmm. Real Housewives, throughout Basketball Wives, throughout Love and Hip Hop yeah. in every single city. Even how she talks about how the focus of reality TV is very much shifted to be primarily women.
Yeah.
That is even very fascinating. Women, it has to do with
oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Like women specifically within this, like within the green girl framework.
Yes.
Too. Like, so it's not just like women doing different stuff. It's like women specifically whose value and worth and like life revolves around how sexually attractive they are and like physically attractive they are and like what that can get them.
Yeah.
Like that's like the specific ecosystem that reality television revolves around.
Yeah. And she kind of dives into it. And she also talks about she has a lot like extreme like love and appreciation for reality mm-hmm. TV as well. And, you know, also is kind of aware. She talks about another book that highlights a lot of the issues within reality.
Oh,
TV.
Yeah. Joan Didion and Play It As It Lays.
I think it's really interesting to look at like how that became the trope and narrative that kind of stands out in a lot of these different shows. Especially within the shows that focus on black people.
Yeah.
So if you look at like Love and Hip Hop, a lot of that is what person within the industry am I in a relationship with? Am I trying to be in a relationship with? And I'm using that relationship and other connections that I'm building to try to either like make it within the rap industry or yeah. like, you know, or singing like in R&B. I'm using that to try to gain some sort of wealth. Like that is very much how they're like how they approach it
yeah.
and laying out their ambitions with them being in the show.
You know what's interesting is that it makes me think about the video ho groupie dichotomy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Where like I think about like you're like now that you described like Love and Hip Hop in that way, Hollywood operates no differently. Like
oh, yeah.
a lot of famous women that you know who quote unquote dated or fucked the right person or the right combination of people or the right people in succession
yeah.
to get what it is that they have.
Yeah.
Now, does that mean that they're not talented? Not necessarily. It doesn't mean that they, like, you know, if they have an Oscar, Golden Globe, or an Emmy or whatever, that they didn't earn it. But it's a lot that goes into that. I'm not saying that everybody does that, but like in the music industry and specifically in Hollywood, like in Hollywood, it's fine. Casting couch is like yeah. a thing. Like it's like interesting that it's called the casting couch in Hollywood, but like
there's no real equivalent for that in other.
Yeah. And it's like kind of a part of the whole thing. You know, it's like anything else. It's like really terrible when black women do it.
Yeah.
But it's like.
But that's in all these shows.
Yeah.
I know. I watch
yeah.
them all.
You know, I watch
them all. Like, it, you know, it very much, there are a lot of the shows, except for like maybe I would say probably New York. And I think we talked about like Beverly Hills, where a lot of the women are kind of like independently wealthy.
Yeah.
A lot of it
have a long standing marriage relationship with somebody who's
yeah.
like, where they kind of came up together and all that stuff.
Yeah. A lot of it is I kind of married into this wealth or, mm-hmm. you know, have recently accessed it as a result of some sort of relationship
yeah.
With a man. And that, like, honestly, that's really, it's really interesting, too, because of how that like specifically within the show and how they relate with each other, how that is a normal thing that is not necessarily looked down upon mm-hmm. as much.
Yeah.
You know, like, especially if you look at like Atlanta. Like, Atlanta is fascinating because like no one there seems to come from a long line of like money.
No,
you know?
If any line of money.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you have and you have certain women who I think who have made their money on their own, like Cynthia. Clearly, she made her money from being a model.
Yeah.
And, you know, she married Peter, who she thought probably also had money.
And Peter had no money.
Have no money.
And Candy.
And Candy has her own money from being in, she was in SWV? Escape.
with Tiny.
With Tiny, yeah. So, and Candy had her own money. And so she proceeded to kind of gain more wealth after being on the show.
Yeah.
But if you look at, like, Nene and Kim, who, you know,
yeah,
like who were really, really popular, like they very much, like they kind of married into their wealth and were very new to it.
Yeah.
But initially they weren't really shunned. Now, when they get into it, sometimes they try to, you know, like come at Nene for like she used to be a stripper.
Yeah.
And that's kind of something that happens like frequently.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's kind of an understood method of coming into the group. And I mean, I think that's fascinating too for how, like if you look at outside of that type of ecosystem, that's not really how people would describe that. People are usually a lot more judgmental. Like from what I've seen,
you married into
some wealth. Oh, you married for money.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, to me, that's really, really interesting. And maybe it's as a result of it, women being at the center of these storylines and conversations. Like, men are very much, are supposed to be kind of on the periphery. But that's just a fascinating, like, thing to witness.
Yeah, that is. It's, like, interesting. I wonder if, I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. It's kind of like, reality TV had been around for a while, right? You know what I'm saying? I feel like when VH1 started their celebrity reality programming with The Surreal Life, where Flavor Flav and Brigitte Nielsen like met really for the first time or whatever, like that first, I think that started off more as like a freak show bizarro kind of thing. Like that's how I think that sort of that the reality television as we know it now, I feel like that's kind of how that started. And then you get into like the Flavor of Love thing. And I think that sort of started off a certain, like somewhere between Flavor of Love and like The Bachelor, it started off this idea that like a lot of women should be vying for a man's attention. And it's interesting that like that's the type of reality show that seems to have, it seems like it's actually primed to have the most longevity because like competition reality shows, they're just based off of general, like Survivor or like Amazing Race. Those, I think, have like waned in popularity.
Totally.
For like expert competition, which I think people like competition reality shows, like Top Chef or like, you know, Property Brothers, or, you know, whatever that kind of shit, you know, all that kind of shit people want to see. I don't think Property Brothers is one, but you know, like Love It or List It, right?
Yeah.
So like people like to see people who are great at what they do compete. But like people really like to see women who are kind of more or less regular compete for, like, even if it's not the attention of one man, like you had me watch, I'm not very familiar with the Basketball Wives franchise. It was just like, I think it came out at a time where like I didn't really have a TV or I was going out a lot. I don't know.
Yeah.
Might have just been drinking a lot, going out a lot. I just missed it.
Might have been living.
I might have missed the TV. But you had me watch yesterday the Basketball Wives LA season 4 finale. And what was the thing that was really interesting to me about it that was really different than any other reality show is it seemed like it like captured what you're talking about and also the essence of like competing for a man's attention. It like captured all that. Like these women, there was like a desperation. So you have like within the Basketball Wives franchise, it's kind of run by Shawnee O'Neal, who is Shaquille O'Neal's ex-wife. And also just like in general, I think that like even outside of being Shaquille O'Neal's ex-wife, she seems to have meaningful entertainment relationships. Like I want to say she gave Kevin Hart like one of his first major shows. She's like somebody who knows people can kind of get shit done in LA, it seems like.
Definitely.
And then you have Tammy Roman, who is I think you would agree with this, she seems to be a master of the form.
Oh yeah, she is skilled. She is an expert. She's expert level reality TV game.
If these bitches is violins, Tammy Roman is a fucking Stradivarius, okay?
Where's the lie?
Like, so like they're kind of, and they're also a little bit older. They come from sort of like an old, they were basketball wives before being a basketball wife was something that you could aspire to.
Yeah.
Right? And then so you see them sort of, you see with Shawnee that she's seemed to be like a kind of a like a savvy woman who formed a lot of relationships to be able to continue to support herself, it seems like very well.
Yeah.
She's doing great.
Yeah, she's straight.
And she's an executive producer on the show, which I don't know if she ever started out that way. I don't know.
No, I think she did.
Oh, she did. Good for
I think
her.
She always was kind of the convener. She was kind of like the initial.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, she was in the mix initially.
Yeah.
But then, like, once shit like popped off, she was like, "Let me take a step back and like put all the shit together."
Right. Yeah. And then you have Tammy, who's like, Tammy who knows how to keep shit going and knows how to
she's
get
a
her
shit
check.
Starter.
She's a shit starter in the best way possible. And so you have them on one side, and then you have these younger girls who some of them they seem like they're under 30, so like they are young enough to have. Wanted to have this lifestyle that they thought was something.
Yeah.
They don't seem to have considered that they needed like a backup plan. Certainly, again, I'm taking you all's intelligence for granted. There's something to be said for the fact that patriarchy gives women a limited amount of choices.
Yeah.
And then they get punished for choosing wrong.
Yeah. Like a lot of women get pushed into these types of relationships and are groomed for it.
Yes, are groomed for it.
Yeah.
Ooh, which is like its own thing. But yeah. So like, but it was just very, very interesting to see that like they didn't seem to have anything else going on.
Yeah.
And like they didn't seem to have any, there was no safety net for them that they had tried to provide for themselves. Like their goal was to get on this show and to put on this ball gown or whatever, or, you know, and like.
Have shit pop off.
And have shit pop off and sit at this reunion. And like, it was weird because it almost seemed like I was watching them. Like, they recapped the season.
Yeah.
You know, now for Real Housewives of Atlanta or something like that, they'll have like a 2 or 3 part reunion.
Yeah, they have
to. They have to because there's so much shit that happens.
Yeah.
Or even like, even I watch
Love and Hip Hop.
Yeah, I was going to say, Love and Hip Hop Atlanta.
Yeah.
I had stepped away.
Reunion.
Yeah. Yeah, they have to because so much shit happens. I got back into Love and Hip Hop Atlanta recently because I had stepped away for a couple seasons, but I ended up watching a reunion and I was like, yo, I have to watch this shit. But with Basketball Wives LA, it was weird because like they didn't have anything else going on. Like this, it was like, it reminded me sort of like what the base of like the base, like the basis, I guess, of what these shows really is.
Yeah.
These women are not vying for the affection of specifically one man, but there's a certain type of man who they like all of their actions are governed by. First and foremost, it's not necessarily can I provide for myself or provide for my children. It's governed by like, will a man like this find me attractive enough and appealing enough to have me as his wife and then provide for me and my children?
Yeah.
It's weird because we're like Drea or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, I think a lot of y'all know who Drea is. She's like been a fixture, I think, on Basketball Wives LA for a while.
Yeah.
I don't watch the show, but I still know who she is. She's very famous on Instagram. She's also very infamous for not really taking care of her kids. La di da. So Drea, they didn't fuck with her on the show, it seems like, this season because she didn't need to be on the show. She actually, through, I don't know if it's Waist Trainers, Instagram Tea, or Weave, or whatever. I honestly have no clue where she makes her money.
She has a bikini line. It's actually very, very popular. It's called Mint Swim.
Oh, I've heard of this. Yeah.
So she runs Mint Swim. She has also like some other clothing line. I think it's called like Fine Ass Girls.
Yeah.
Or something, which is.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. I remember she was trying to make the FAG hats pop.
Yeah.
Off, and
yeah.
I was like, girl, come on.
You got it. Like,
right. You can't.
You're smarter than
right.
This. But Mint Swim is really, really popular. Like she's made like very legitimate money from it.
Right. And so like they seem to resent her because she kind of like. In a weird way, like to bring it back to the Green Girl thing, there's this idea of like the first, like the Green Girl, the actual, like the first book that that Roxane Gay talks about in the episode, I mean, in the essay, is like she talks about her as a green, like this character named, I think, Ruth, as a green girl on the rise, basically somebody who knows that she's very beautiful to other people and like is stepping into how to kind of control it, but it's also really tiring for her. But she's like younger and she understands that she's a fixture in other people's lives, but like she's accessing that power. And then you have Maria from Play It As It Lays, a Joan Didion book, who like is a woman who like has already reached that apex and is like all like over the hill and like going like down fucking fast.
Yeah.
And like, it's interesting because like Drea seems like somebody who is on the other side of the hill and was like, I need to make some money. And, like, I need to do something.
And
like,
maximize her time within that system.
Right. And Tammy seems to have done that. And Shawnee seems to have done that. And the other girls are still, like, they're in, what is it? There's a specific, like, what is it? Green Girl Interrupted.
Yeah.
And it seemed like all the other girls from that season of Basketball Wives who were, like, in various stages of divorce or breakup or whatever, or separation, or, like, they seem to, or even just girls who were hangers-on for the girls who were wives or girlfriends, right, who also didn't really seem to have any sort of discernible talent or hustle, they seemed to be in this stage where you could see that they were being, like one of the girls who was a Green Girl Interrupted, let's say, came for Shawnee, who was a green girl who already fell and rose back up again like a fucking phoenix from the ashes. And Shawnee's the boss, so she said, you're a bitch. And Shawnee was like,
you're fired.
Yeah, they were on vacation. They were having a conversation. She didn't like something Shawnee said to her. She called her a bitch. Shawnee was like, okay, well, your services have like, you know, you're done. So yeah. She was like, basically, like, pack your bags, you gotta go home. You're
and
off
she
the
had
show.
To she had to go home.
Because this, like, woman was her boss.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, she, like, you know, they're sitting around the fire in Puerto Rico and she just had to get up and walk off and, like, with her tail between her legs, like a bitch, and then still have to show up to the fucking reunion, which Dre didn't come to because Dre didn't need the money.
Exactly.
This other bitch had to show up because she needed the money.
Yeah. And so, wants to be on the show again.
Exactly. And wants to be on the show again. So she had to eat shit. It was really sad and interesting and sad to see that, like, they didn't understand, like, they only understood that small ecosystem of trying to get this man.
Yeah.
They didn't understand the larger ecosystem that they were part of, because, like, what happens when, you know, what happens when the cellulite, you start to get a little more? What happens when the booty falls? What happens when the breast falls? What happens when you start to get the fine lines? And then, like, you know, no shade to Carly Red from Love and Hip Hop Atlanta. There's been a lot of cracks about her age because, like, you, like, the more you, she seems so desperate to look young that it makes her look even older. And, like, it sucks, but in this economy of love, let's say, to borrow from Juno Diaz.
Love and Housewives.
Exactly. In this economy of Love and Housewives, like, being young, you know, it makes your value higher. And it's like, it's just fucking sad because they didn't, they were like, you could see within just the 45 minute one part, like, reunion special that they were getting fucking hipped to the shit, and it was painful.
And they weren't there for it. Like, I mean, the interesting thing, so, like, in all these shows, everybody is clearly, like, being on the show is a hustle, is the come up, but everybody's also trying to use that to peddle, you know, kind of their next move. You know, in the Love and Hip Hop shows, most of the time it's like, it's their music, which never actually comes out. But
that's one of the things I respect about Black China and Amber Rose, is that they both know what their lane is. And they say Black China got like five businesses. Don't get it twisted. Black China out here making money.
Yeah, some of the people within these shows are as well. But going back to Basketball Wise LA, it's clear that they're still trying to find that. And in that show, they thought that their life as is, you know, would, like, the performance of their life as is would be interesting enough, you know, so that they could maintain their status on that show.
No.
And that's clearly kind of not happening how they would like. They, you know, and they're struggling with that. They didn't understand why a Tammy Roman need to come in to kind of to stir shit up.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't understand why they were boring, like, for like, and I actually find, like, I really like Malaysia Pargo, I think is her last
one
name.
One of the Green Girls Interrupted, who's boring as fuck, honestly. She was boring. The woman who had survived cancer was boring. Ooh, and Drea said the rudest shit to her. Now, Drea did say, like, she's like, she basically was like, you know, you're basically saying, like, your cancer storyline is boring. Yeah. It was interesting and meta to see Drea come, like, they had a private conversation where basically she said on the surface, and this is rude, and it was rude on every level.
Yeah.
She said on the surface, basically, you having cancer is
doesn't
boring.
Doesn't matter,
It doesn't matter. Nobody cares about it. But, like, it was interesting to see her step out of her role as an actor on the show, because that's essentially what she is. Step out of her role as an actress on the show, and then also to, like, almost produce, what's this girl's name, Brandy, in a way, where she's like, because Brandy's story is that, like, yeah, she had cancer, she survived, but then she's also trying to divorce her husband. And she's also just not that interesting of a person in the first place.
Yeah.
And so she's basically, she said, this is boring. She said, on this show, and then this girl was like, you can't say that to me. And she was like, on this show, it's boring. Meaning, like,
within the mix of all this other stuff that's going on, that's not necessarily going to be the storyline that makes people come back every single week.
And she was insulting her, but she was also, in a sickening way, giving her, like,
it was a very astute, like, critique and understanding of your place in the ecosystem.
Yeah, and it's just like, if you want to continue to survive here, you got to bring something else to the table, girl.
Yeah.
Which is crazy on so many levels.
Yeah, because that, if this is going to be your only hustle.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you gotta really push it. You gotta really take it to the next level.
You see, look, Tammy Roman started off on The Real World as a shit starter.
Yeah.
And then she came to Original Basketball.
Well, she was a lot more chill in Real World.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But she still was, she's hype, let's say. And then she came on, Tammy was hype in The Real World. And then she came on Basketball Wives. And then she moved to, I think, Miami. She came back to LA. She left the show and Shawnee called her back for this season. Tammy knows how to play her part.
Yeah. So it's really fascinating in general to see how these women, like, use this as their platform and context, like, to drive themselves to another level.
Mm-hmm.
But it does a lot of times have to go through men. And even when it doesn't, like, when they do try to step outside of that, like, in the sense of, like, a Brandy or Malaysia, they try to just say, oh, this is my life. This is what it is. This is why you watch.
It's
like, it's clearly not Like, that's not really what's working for
no.
them.
No. And they have no, it's like, it was really sad to see them realize that, like, because I think at the end of the, it, no, I think at the end of the reunion, John Sally, who was hosting.
So bad, too.
Yeah, who was hosting the reunion, which was bizarre. I was just like, why are you here? And then like, we were watching it, and it was like, because he was a basketball player. Yeah. It took me forever to understand that. Yeah, and he has a wife, and I'm like, oh, okay. But he asked Shawnee, like, you know, basically, are you bringing everybody back from this season? And she was like, I don't know.
We'll see.
Yeah. And, like, it was interesting to see, like, Tammy Roma sitting there. She's chilling. Jennifer, or what is that her name?
Mm-mm.
No, the old woman.
Jackie. Who is fast. Oh, my God. Jackie's probably one of my favorite.
They had to blur her coochie out. That's all I got to say about that.
She was like, I got panties on. I'm doing better. Like,
right,
I got
exactly.
Panties.
I think had her legs open. At one point, she was wearing a very short skirt and fishnets, which was also confounding on the special. And then they had to blur her coochie out because she was trying to make a point to somebody. The legs open. And
She didn't care.
She was like, look, I got panties on. Okay, so y'all gonna let me make my point. She's a mess. But also, you can see on the show, like, I learned from watching the clips, like, she knows how to make the most of her.
Yeah.
When she didn't know that potpourri was not pronounced potpourri. And she's like, oh, this tastes like a potpourri.
Yeah.
And Drea's like, what?
Yeah.
And she's like, potpourri, you know, you don't use potpourri? And she was like, it's potpourri.
Yeah.
It's like dead.
But she knew that was a moment.
And she knew to care. Like, she doesn't give, she's such a fucking ham. She doesn't care about making herself look crazy. When she talked about performing oral sex to her husband and putting Purex in her mouth.
Oh, my God.
I don't even know if she did that. You know what I'm saying?
But
she knew that that was going to be something that was going to, she knew that that was going to get her on air. And, like, it was just interesting to see. She's sitting chilling. Tammy's sitting chilling. Shawnee's sitting chilling. And then every other girl was sitting up there stressed, sweating harder than a mug. Because, like, one girl was like, ooh, I'm divorced.
Yeah.
Or like, oh, I might get a divorce. Or my relationship is in jeopardy. And I called Shawnee a bitch.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of boring. It's like.
And I probably don't have no job.
Yeah.
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 So I do want to talk about, like, I want to talk about Love and Hip Hop, the New York version, and specifically Cardi B. Because, like, I don't think, like, Cardi B is clearly having a moment right now. And I think she as a person is fascinating within this, like, reality TV ecosystem.
Yeah.
For very much how she kind of, she definitely is in that green girl rising stage a little bit. Like, she's tapped into, like, she had a social media following and that, like, blew up. She kind of, like, took that to the next level.
Yeah.
And used that to get on Love and Hip Hop.
Yeah.
And it's very much just a lot more open about how, like, what she's doing and how she aims to do it than anybody else is, like, within the show.
Yes.
So
she's a green girl rising, but she can see the way the whole shit is laid out.
And she, like, she knows what she got to do to, like, maximize her potential, her wealth, you know, and her access at every single point.
Yeah.
And, like, that's really, really fascinating. So to go back, Cardi B from, like, the Bronx and, like, it grew up as a stripper, like, really got big based off of, like, a few of her, like, Instagram videos.
She's hilarious.
That really popped off. Like, specifically, like, the one where she was like, a hoe never gets cold.
Yeah, a hoe, like, never gets cold.
Yeah.
I identify with that so strongly.
Like, it was amazing.
Yeah.
She's now loving hip hop. At first, it's confusing because you think somebody coming into, like, somebody like Cardi B, who's very, like, very kind of loud. I mean, I guess you say, like, quote unquote, like, hood coming into this thing. She's going to get into it with everybody. Like, that's kind of what I was anticipating.
Uh-huh. Me too.
In terms of her storyline on the show. It's almost, like, very, very different. She was very clear. Like, her primary storyline a lot of times runs into, like, this guy, DJ Self, who works at Hot 97.
Yeah.
And
who is a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So they were, like, in a sexual relationship, but they were also had a business relationship.
Yeah.
Where
they common theme, by the way. Yeah. But go ahead.
Surprise.
Yeah.
Where they would host parties, like, she would strip and, like, also host parties, and he would DJ.
Yeah.
So they were making money, and they also had this sexual relationship. And she was very much like, I don't care what you do outside of this. Just kind of, you know, be straight up with me.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter because I'm doing stuff, too. Like, she very much made him kind of like, she was like, he is my side chick. I know I'm probably also his. There's this, like, one scene where they meet. He meets up with her at a party, and then he made the mistake of bringing his girlfriend, who he didn't really want to claim, to the same party.
She's a mess, too.
And they got into a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Cardi B and the girlfriend got into a big fight.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that, she was really frustrated because she was like, look. Like, it was clear that she didn't want to fight that girl. The girl kind of came for her.
Yeah.
You know, Cardi B was like, look, you know, this is what's happening. I'm not about to lie about it. Yeah. I am who I am. It is what it is. But it was clear she didn't want to fight. And she seemed at that moment very confused. Like, look, you know, I'm very clear about what my lane is. You know what I'm saying? If you would communicate, if you would have communicated with me, this didn't have to be like this.
Yeah.
Because I'm primarily here for this business relationship.
Yeah.
I'm not tied up in this love shit like a lot of these, like a lot of the other women in the show are. So that went sour.
And then that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
And so then after that, she definitely like clearly decided, like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna be real open with it. Like she was like, look, I'm out, I'm on this show to use these men to gain some status or wealth or to make my music pop off.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of why I'm here. She was like, and that makes me feel good about myself.
Yeah.
Like, it makes me feel powerful.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly the word that she used that I found very interesting.
Yeah. And, like, nobody that I've really seen says that.
No. Nobody ever brings it that front of house.
Yeah. And that was really fascinating because a lot of people do that. Men and women, very much like use women for whatever, you know, for whatever they're looking for at that particular time.
Yeah.
And, you know, then move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
But for her to like not only have that be the plan and to be open with it and very OK with it and find it empowering to me was very fascinating.
Well, it's like there's this this part of the Roxane Gay essay about the Green Girl, where she talks about how reality television created this specific like type of, like it basically exacerbates these like really trite stereotypes about women, which is that like they're concerned with maintaining, I think she said, this near pornographic standard of beauty, that they don't get along well with other women, that they don't, you know, feel like they have, you know, anything to contribute, all that kind of stuff. And Cardi B willingly participates in this ecosystem, but also like kind of upends a lot of that stuff. She seems to be like you said, and like you showed me a clip earlier this morning about like Cardi B seems to be interested in having stable and supportive relationships with the other women on the show.
Yeah.
Provided that they're not wild.
Like on some other shit.
Yeah, on some other shit. Like as long as they're reasonable, she's like willing to like be upfront with her shit. And like she fully gets what she's walked into, and she's really open about her ambitions in this way, that totally kind of like subverts the like the subscribed trope that she's supposed to be playing out.
Exactly.
And it makes the show really interesting.
Yeah. Like especially like around her, because a lot of the like it's one of those scenarios like where the thing you think is going to happen or that typically happens when, you know, someone like Cardi B is in the mix, does not. She is very supportive of the other women. She does not have as much beef.
No.
You know, a lot of the fun of Cardi B is just watching her actually have a pretty healthy and happy experience as she moves through like these scenarios. Now, she's very frustrated with DJ Self because she feels like, yo, we're friends and I feel like I help you, you should be helping me. And that's clearly very frustrating for her, especially considering their past history.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, like, she's straight.
Yeah, and she also seems to have a very strong understanding of, like, I feel like with Cardi B, if her music never popped off, I feel like she would be okay with that, because I think that she seems to be somebody who is really interested in accessing as wide of an audience as possible, and that whatever thing that she realizes that people respond to the most is the thing she's going to stick with, which is just good business sense in the first place.
Yeah.
She just seems to be really savvy and really have a strong understanding of what her talent is.
Yeah.
And like she seems to have a greater goal that she's working toward. I don't know what that is, but like I find her really fascinating in that sense. I also find it really fascinating in that, like, because so much of these shows, like the dynamic on these shows revolves so much around desirability, there are different ways for women to go about accessing desirability. So like on Real Housewives of Potomac, it's etiquette.
Yeah.
And like on Real Housewives of Atlanta, it seems to be just the appearance of having money, or even etiquette in a different way, which is that Southern gentility and like seeming like a Georgia peach. And, you know, having the fat, like Love and Hip Hop. I mean, Love and Hip Hop Atlanta is kind of like almost like a Funhouse mirror version of like of Real Housewives of Atlanta, where like it's like who has the fattest ass, who seems the youngest, who's, you know, like, who's going to stay with her man the longest, all that kind of, like, you can access it with your looks, you can access it with your behavior or with your perceived, I guess, like, status value.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see Cardi B not really, like, her respectability is at null.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, her desire to come across as respectable is just not present.
Yeah, she's very clear about the fact, like, I used to be, like, I, like, months ago used to be a stripper.
Yeah, was stripping. And like, I'm doing this now because I talked to the right people. I sucked the right dick and I did, you know, all this kind of stuff. Like, she's really open about that, which is refreshing. But also, like, the way that she even presents herself seems to be very much for herself.
Yeah.
And that, like, she definitely falls in line with the, like, the performance of femininity that is required on these shows. Mm-hmm. But, like, it still seems like a lot of what she's doing is for her. Like, there are not that weird hairstyle that she wears with the cornrows that lead into the big four, the two.
And the braids.
Yeah, and the four braids. And sometimes she puts them between her titties, which looks weird, but it seems like she likes it.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like everything that she does is kind of for, even like, one of my coworkers actually put me onto, like, a 2-hour Cardi B compilation, like best of Cardi B's Instagram 2015, which if you got 2 hours, Instagram only give you 15 seconds. So if you got 2 hours, then you got a back catalog. It's pretty strong. And this is just the best of, right? Yeah. Just the best of 1 year.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen it yet. But he was saying that, like, one of the things he found really interesting about her is he said that, like, he's a fan of her on the show and that he finds her comic timing to be on point, her business sense to be on point. She's fucking hilarious. And also he said that it's interesting because she's not also afraid. She, like, has an understanding of, like, her audience and giving them a little bit and taking it away, and that, like, people make comments about her teeth because her teeth are crooked.
Yeah.
And she, like, was crying, I think, in one video about how, you know, like, people were talking about her teeth and it really hurt her. But she was like, but lets me suck dick better, so, you know, whatever. And, like, that I find to be very interesting. Cardi B probably has enough money to get her teeth fixed.
Yeah, she definitely does.
But
right
she
now.
Don't really.
She's not pressed.
No, she's not pressed. She don't give a fuck.
Yeah,
it's like she doesn't. It's like so much of, even on Real Housewives of Potomac, and definitely throughout the Love and Hip Hop and the Basketball Wives franchises, seem to be like who's the most beautiful. Which there's like the standards are weird, and it's a lot of time has to do with, like, I don't mean to put this the wrong way, but, like, there's a, like, within, like, music circles and with athlete circles, men have this obsession with, like, foreign, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And, like,
we've touched on it, I think, in other ways, in other episodes. As long as you seem kind of black,
yeah,
but you don't look too black, that's like the thing. And Cardi B don't even really, like, granted, she's a light-skinned woman, and she's also Latina, which, like, offers you in black circles a wild amount of privilege. If I had a dollar for every man who has approached me because he thought I was Dominican, and then turned his little black ass right around because he found out I was just regular old slave black from the United States, which is hilarious because also, like, how y'all think all these black people got to the Caribbean?
Yep.
But never mind.
That's another episode.
That's another episode for another time. They got brought over by different colonizers.
Yep.
But
Made a different stop off,
exactly. So when they found I'm not Dominican, it's like, you know, you see them, it's like, you know, do a 180 on their heels to turn right the fuck around. Because, like, just being regular black is not that interesting. Like, it's interesting to see, like, she does have a certain amount of, like, privilege in that sense, right? But still, she doesn't have the expected signifiers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. She doesn't go out of her way to look the way that you would think that these men want her to look. She's Cardi B for Cardi B.
Yeah.
And that's really, and she's open about what the fuck she's getting.
Yeah.
And everybody's still trying to get in their panties.
And that's, I mean, that's like a very, for me, seeing that on the show, like, very much stood out in a very, like, positive way. And it really does make you root for her.
Yeah.
I don't know many people who, like, just genuinely, they, like, don't, who've watched the show, who genuinely just don't like her.
Yeah.
So, there's one thing that I do want to touch on.
Uh-huh.
I think it's interesting. So obviously I watch reality TV and I have a degree of reference for it. You watch it occasionally and genuinely enjoy
it when you
do. How you feel about the perception of reality TV within, like, content as a whole. And to say more about that, like, specifically, like, I do struggle with it sometimes because, you know, obviously a lot of this is very, very big stereotypes, you know, like, in terms of how they cast people on the show.
Yeah.
Like, Cardi B is fascinating because they casted her as a stereotype and she rebelled against it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But for a lot of the other people on the show, is very much like that is...
They fall in line.
And, you know, to each his own. And it is this performance, like, this performance aspect of it where people very much feel, and it's probably true, especially in the case of, like, Basketball Wives.
Yeah.
That they have to take it to this next level that, like, is ridiculous, that is crazy, that is over the top, that is exploitive to a degree, you know, to stay relevant. And I do struggle watching that. But I guess like where I feel somewhat more okay with it, and I'm curious as to whether or not this is true for you, is that one, I think that the people who are on reality TV are a lot more cognizant of reality TV's perception than people think they do.
Yeah, I agree with that. A lot of them know where their check is coming from.
Yeah. And then two, like it doesn't feel, for me, it doesn't feel that different than like a soap opera or a Maury.
Yeah.
You know, like Maury or like Jerry Springer, like old school Jerry Springer. Like while it is people's lives, while these are actual people's lives who we, you know, laugh at, like are sad for, feel like
connected to in some
feel
sense.
Connected to.
Yeah.
There is a bit of distance there. They are performing in a way that I feel like even though other people are seeing this, other people, white people are seeing this and, you know, and participating in it. It does also still feel like it's being made more than a Maury or a Jerry Springer for us.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that.
I'm tired of criticizing something specifically for the reason that white people might see it.
Yeah, I don't care about that.
That shit is ridiculous.
I'm going to tell you what. White people don't care that we can see, like, Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah, Donald Trump.
Or, like, Honey Boo Boo. Yeah. Like, they don't care. Like, that's what I'm saying is, like, they don't care that we can see that. I don't. I think black people have every right to be just as fucked up as white people are.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we deserve that right. I mean, I could see how, like, I think that for some people, I think, like you said, there's enough people who are savvy enough to understand that, like, there's a trade-off. To have all of us up in your business, to be performing your life in front of all of us for maybe, honestly, only 3 to 6 months out of the year, right? You get a lot more money than you would get otherwise. Yeah. And you have a lot more opportunities to make money, whether it's club appearances or opening, you know, stores. And
starting some sort of line.
Yeah.
Because everybody got a line.
Everybody and their mama got a line. Yeah. Like, you have opportunities to do stuff like that and opportunities to make more money and have more people know who you are. Like, I could see how, like, they know kind of what they're getting out of it, I think, in a lot of senses. I mean, you do have certain people who don't know and then they learn and they fall off, or they don't know and they learn and they become Drea. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Or they become NeNe or they become Tammy Roman.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, I feel fine about those women. I guess the thing that is kind of weird, something that is like becoming harder for me the older that I get, there's a certain mentality I think that you have to stay in order to participate in that kind of lifestyle. And that kind of lifestyle, I'm trying to figure out how to put this, exists on reality television and also outside of it.
Yes.
Everybody knows women who act like this. Do you know what I'm saying? Everybody knows women who would act like this regardless. And it's hard because the older I get, the more I come into contact with people who live that kind of lifestyle still. Like, it's one of those things where, like, we talked earlier about grooming for that kind of lifestyle. Having gone to Howard. You know what I'm saying?
There's a lot of that.
There's a lot of that. Like so much of, like, my, like, I feel like I've gone through, like, 7 awkward phases as an adult because, like, I learned so much damaging shit. There was, like, a weird, I learned so much damaging shit about how I was incorrectly performing femininity for so long. But then, like, the correct way to perform femininity, like the what you got for performing femininity correctly sometimes in, like, the D.C. area, which is interesting because Potomac's right around there. And also, like, when I was at Howard, it's, like, not saying this is all girls, but there were some girls who were, you know, dating professional athletes or dating, you know, business owners, guys who own clubs and bars and men with money. That was what you got. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was the prize that you got.
Yeah.
And, like, that's, like, even though, like, not everybody was necessarily trying to shoot for that, if you wanted to date somebody almost period, like, a dude could kind of be doing whatever. But, like, as a woman, you had to, as a young woman, you had to be.
You had to hustle for it.
Yeah. You still had to be, you had to be within that framework. And, like, I was too awkward. And also, like, I think I told you, I learned when I was, like, 11, like, I just wasn't that cute. And so I was like, all right. I got to get some other fucking skills.
Yeah.
And so, like, that was kind of, like, how I moved throughout the world. And, like, until I graduated from college and, like, went out into the real world.
Yeah.
And, like I didn't realize that I was okay. And, like, I thought that I was doing it wrong for so long. So to kind of see, like, these, like, but, like, to stay in that sort of, like, to be, I was penalized socially a lot when I was that age for not performing femininity correctly.
Yeah.
And I fully acknowledge, I think I said this to you, I fully acknowledge the fact that, like, for me to perform femininity, quote unquote, correctly, it wouldn't take that much.
Yeah.
Like, I get that. Like, I totally, totally understand that I fall within a certain range of attractiveness that, like, if I, all I had to do, if I visited the right, you know,
beauty,
yeah, exactly. Maybe if I got a trainer for, like, 6 weeks,
yeah,
like, I would be okay.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, and there are some people who are never, like, you know, people are never going to feel like they're performing correctly. I don't know. It's like there's a certain age range that I associate that type of behavior with and that type of belief about yourself that, like, this is what you have to offer. Or even just, like, the desire to stay within, or feeling like the only options that you have are to stay within those kinds of frameworks into your adulthood. Like, it's it, like when Garish was in the title of the of the Roxane Gay thing. That's how it starts to look. The older that I get and the more that I have a concept of myself as like an adult woman.
Yeah.
Like when I see women who are still caught up in that shit, it's like it makes me really fucking sad. And so like I love reality TV, but like when I watch it, it makes me sad, not necessarily only for the women on the show and not necessarily even for the women on the show. I more so just feel sad because there are women in real life who are not getting the fame and not getting the money and that are still subjecting themselves to the same shit because patriarchy and colorism and like lookism makes you feel like this is something that you have to do.
I mean, that's deep. And honestly, for me, it was a lot, like a lot of that, a little bit of a flip side. I honestly found a lot less, like as a man.
Yeah.
And I've always talked to people, it's like usually the worst things that you can say come after you say as a man.
Yeah.
But but honestly, as a man, like you grow up, especially for somebody who is like sees himself as on a path towards acquiring like wealth, acquiring success.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of conversations for watching out for the green girl, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's a double-edged sword in the sense of like you know, there's obviously the commodification of women for you see it as a trophy.
Yeah.
But then there's also seeing those women as like someone who will take what you've quote unquote worked hard to acquire. So, which is, you know, a lot of patriarchy.
Yeah. Bullshit. Yeah. It's also weird too, because like I will say, especially when in the housewives thing, and I think this about domestic work in general, but specifically the duty that women who stay at home perform is like you give up everything that you ever wanted. Obviously, like I think it's transactional. I think a lot of people don't see it as transactional.
Yeah.
Like you have a woman who's taking care of your children, taking care of your home, like as part of building your brand, right?
And that's not no
enhancing your likability. Like Aisha
investment.
Curry
yeah.
worked just as hard as Steph Curry.
No.
And like a lot of people don't see supporting another person's like dreams and ambitions and lifestyle as a legitimate investment of your life and time.
Exactly. But I mean, honestly, growing up, that was where a lot of the conversation was.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like I was very focused on finding like an equal partner, somebody who was working towards getting their like own shit.
I know, because that's code for you ain't gonna take mine. Do you know how many goddamn broke ass motherfuckers who acted like I was gonna drain their savings account just because I wanted to get a soda at dinner? Fuck y'all.
Not
necessarily you, but
them.
Yeah.
But exactly. So like that was a lot of the conversation. But for me, watching Real Housewives, you know, and also, you know, my like general evolution is like, you know, becoming like a feminist.
Yeah.
And like understanding patriarchy and all that shit too.
I knew you when. Yeah. Hey. Some of the dating advice that you gave me back in the day, Jesus Christ. Go ahead.
Growth. Yay
growth,
for growth.
Yeah. Yay for growth.
But watching it has really helped me to let go a lot of the like ridiculous like judgment and bullshit that kind of came along with that.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like as much as like these shows are a caricature of like what these scenarios will actually be like for anything I would experience.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because I'm never going to meet like, you know, I'm never going to be in a mix with like a Cardi B or even like, you know, a Nene or like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just not moving in with
Nene. Aim
these
higher
circles.
For yourself, Eric. You may one day mix with Nene. Go ahead.
I don't think Carla's going to be cool with that. But, but you know, that said, like, it allows me to really kind of understand and unpack, like, looking at it from a different side. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like seeing that from a different point of view, especially one that centers the woman in the scenario.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I think that's like for me, that also is something I find beneficial about it, you know, regardless of all the like bullshit that it involves. You know what I'm saying? Like for the women in the scenario and then like the exploitiveness.
Mm-hmm.
But like I see a lot of those things in it as well. And I think that's important. And also it's interesting to see that like the men in these scenarios, we didn't really get a chance to talk about this,
yeah.
but a lot of times like I think men are really realizing that for the women in these shows, like how they've acquired a certain amount of fame is, you know, performing their femininity in a specific way and, you know, this kind of like petty ecosystem.
Yeah.
And they're now
petty ecosystem, I love it.
They're now very much trying to like participate and catch up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like and that actually I don't think you got a chance to watch it, but Love and Hip Hop Hollywood,
really?
Woo, is very good with that. Like Ray J.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. Ray J's on that. And then, not Razzby.
Lil Fizz is on it. And Omarion.
Omarion is on it,
like,
right.
And even Rich Giles was on all of them. He's very much the Tammy Roland, Tammy Roman of the, you know, love and hip hop ecosystem. But it's just really interesting to see like men also are trying to catch up to be able to attain that status and that success that a lot of like women have, and black women and women of color have accessed through this like reality TV.
That's really interesting.
Community. So
it's, yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's weird. It's like, when I first read the Roxanne Gay essay that you suggested, at the end of it, she talks about sort of like how you can see yourself. Yeah. And I read it and I was like, nah, I don't really get it. But the more that I think about it, like being constantly like in, like I feel the pressure to perform my femininity to gain certain things, even when I don't realize it. I'm so used to it that it's like, and I still exist far outside of I think a degree that disappoints people from time to time. Like I exist really far outside of like, and I would like, I mean, I would love to, if I felt like it would come to me with greater ease.
Yeah. If you could feel more comfortable in it.
Yeah. If I could feel more comfortable in it. Also, if it just didn't seem like it would just take so much fucking effort, I would greatly enjoy doing the things that one does to better perform, quote unquote, my femininity. I would love to do those things.
Need a lot of YouTube tutorials.
Yeah, and like I just don't have the, I don't pick stuff up like that very easily. I would love to be able to do that. I still, like, there's still a lot of stuff that I do that, like, and there's still a lot of things, like, experiences that I've had in my life where I've existed within a similar framework. It's like, you can't fucking escape it. And it takes so much fucking deprogramming to even be able to live healthily outside of it. And every woman is still somewhat, like, even, like, okay, so, like, I have a great job. I have things that I do that I find creatively fulfilling. I have wonderful friends and family. I have a great relationship. And, like, I have a great, specifically healthy relationship. Yeah. I'm sure you would agree after having been around for years and years.
Yeah. Upgrade.
But, fucking upgrade. But it took so much willful abstention from, like, from so much shit.
Yeah.
And it took so many years of fucking therapy and so much of like what we discussed before, Melissa Harris Perry describing as standing upright in a crooked room to be able to function healthily. And even that's a recent development.
Yeah.
Like function healthily, like 85% outside of that ecosystem. But every woman, every cis woman, and every trans woman, every woman, period, has skin in that game. And it fucking sucks. Even if you're not necessarily, even if you're not interested in presenting as quote unquote feminine, you still have, like, your being is a reaction in some senses, or your performance, or feeling like you have no interest in performing, or you have an inability to perform, is still tethered to that.
It's almost like the double consciousness for like blackness. Like, you still, it's all, like, it's all connected to whiteness in some sort of way. That relationship is just inexplicably tied.
Yeah, it fucking sucks. Yeah. Actually, now that I really think about it.
Well, now that I've depressed you, I think it's a good time to wrap up.
This was good. I'm glad that you wanted to discuss this.
Yeah, I mean, it's been bubbling for a long time. I think I'm glad Real Housewives of Potomac was the kind of the
gateway drug.
Yeah, because I think it's a really good. And honestly, it's if you're new to reality TV and you've for the people who feel above it, I find the Real Housewives of Potomac is one of the ones that will like break you down and like, yeah, come down here with the rest of us.
Exactly.
Because it's fun.
It's so fun and it's so interesting. And I think that there's a lot there.
Yeah, I agree. So as always, we love it if you write us and tell us if you agree or disagree.
Yes.
And actually, we got a really good email. We'll shout them out on Twitter. But somebody wrote to us and they were saying that we always tell people to review. We never tell them where to review.
iTunes.
So please go to iTunes and write us a review. You know, whether it's about a specific episode or the show in general.
Yeah.
Tell us what you think. We really appreciate it. It really helps people find the show.
Yeah.
And generally, you know, tell your friends. Share.
Yeah. Share, and share alike.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, we'll holler at you guys in a couple more weeks.
Yeah. Thanks.
All right. Peace.
Bye.